We've talked about farm-to-school programs on the program before. I'm not sure we've talked about garden-to-school programs, though. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Chef Josh Perkins with us today. He's the regional executive chef supporting Chartwell's K-12 North Central region. He's committed to bringing local organic food to schools and helping kids eat better. And so we'll talk about those programs and maybe about your school lunch program as it incorporated fresh local foods. What's been the result? What questions you have about getting kids to eat better? I hope you'll join in our conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Chef Josh, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
It's my pleasure, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Well, you work with Chartwell's K-12. For those who aren't familiar, what does this company do?
So Chartwell's K-12 is a subsidiary of Compass Group, and that's a large contract food service. And Chartwell's is the K-12 division. So we feed, you know, in this case, in North Central, Chartwell's K-12 regionally feeds 70 accounts, about 200,000 students a day. So ranging, grades kindergarten through 12th grade.
So 200,000, that's a lot of kids.
For the region, yeah. This is just the territory I cover, and be much more for the nation, but...
Wow, so you're the chef in a way for 200,000 children. And so what are your responsibilities?
My responsibilities are kind of broad ranging, but I spend a lot of time and attention just on my region. It's kind of split between endeavors on the national level to really plan out what our menus should look like, the products that we want to use, the programs we want to use, including farms, local sourcing, that kind of thing. And those are on the high level, and then when it gets right down to the nitty gritty operationally, you know, day in, day out, I'm working with people right here in the region, including accounts, you know, school sites, going there, training their staff, working with the directors of those accounts, consulting with them. That's the lion's share of my time, yeah. Because that's really where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, you're very committed, I know, to bringing local, fresh, organic food into schools. Talk more about how you're doing that.
So first and foremost, I would say I am committed personally, but it's not possible without the same commitment on the part of our operators and the units. And I want to credit them because we have to have that commitment on the other side too. They're the ones who are actually making the calls to find out which farms produce is available from, making the communications with students when they get that produce in and planning that for their menus. So, as you mentioned, October is Farm to School Month. That's coming right up. And, you know, what could be more appropriate? We're kind of at that point in the year when a lot of students used to literally come back from the farm to their to their school classrooms. Less the case now, but we're in the harvest time. So this is a time of year when we really start to see, particularly in this region, a lot of great produce coming in to our distributors, upper Midwest. You know, sometimes the late summer is the best time for those things. So one thing that we do, which is available to all units, whether they have, you know, all schools that we work with, whether they have a garden or not, is to be able to contact their produce distributor and say, I really want to work with as much local as I can. What's available? Mm-hmm. Where is it from? And that's the first step in being able to serve that produce and being able to connect the students who eat it in those meal programs with their region, their town, their county, the farms around there. The other side of it is, you know, actually having gardens on site.
And is that the difference between farm to school and garden to school?
It
gardens
is.
On site?
It is, because we don't have any schools, at least not yet, that have their own farms. I think that's, you know, an exciting possibility somewhere. I know that there are some institutions of higher education that have gone that far. Just came back from one in Maine, actually. But what we have is we have a growing presence of schools. I have several that I can talk about here in North Central that have gardens on site and are either they're working on incorporating the produce that the students are actively engaged in growing that produce. It's not sort of a postcard garden.
Yeah.
It's something that's being used as a way to teach students, certainly about gardening, but it incorporates or can incorporate many disciplines. And taking that produce and saying, let's work on a way to get that actually into the meal program so students can see that full circle, direct involvement. Got a great partnership with the National Gardening Association. Have worked with them to develop a great resource kit and sort of an owner's manual of how you take a school garden from okay, we have some produce now, and the students maybe were responsible at the front end for planting it, and what happens to that now? Can it become, you know, incorporated into the meal programs? And that's one thing I'm working on this next year with some operators who have committed to going that far, which is great.
Samantha in Whitehall has a question for you. Let's go there. Samantha, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. What I was wondering is, I've been out of school for 16 years, maybe 17 years now. And when I was in school, we had all the, like, fried foods, you know, and a lot more, like, you know, what we thought was good, but then in the long run, unhealthy food. And I work in the independent school district off and on, subbing as a, like, in the kitchen when they need help. And we try to incorporate all kinds of healthy foods and fruits and making sure that the kids get the stuff. But how do you get kids more interested in liking, you know, fruits and vegetables and not all the junk food?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's something you're obviously working on, Chef Josh.
Yeah, it's something we talk about constantly because I think it's a very common experience. And I think there are two main avenues that we try to use. You know, one we just discussed, which is one that's not accessible to every school. If you have a garden, that's a great way to make a direct tie-in for students. But a lot of schools don't. And if you don't, I think one of the things to recognize is that kids get messages about food every day. They're actually bombarded with them. And when we put a different kind of food in front of a student, we can't assume that the first time they're going to say, great, well, I've been told French fries are the best thing since sliced bread, mm-hmm. since I was born, essentially. Everywhere mm-hmm. I look, everywhere I listen, right? Now you're putting something in front of me like a piece of broccoli. Don't get served this at home. Don't really know. You know, a lot of what we do in our programs is try to get better familiarity for these foods and not assume that the first time is going to be the win. You know, you say, let's do some sampling. Let's not ask this student if they want something brand new for their lunch. And that's all they can have, or that's the main thing. Let's get some samples out there. Let's talk about it, and then let's do it again and again. One thing we're really finding is that we tend to underestimate the number of times people, and I will say people, and I don't think it's only kids, have to really see or hear or experience something before they feel comfortable with it. And it can sometimes be, you know, 10, 15, 20 times before a kid says, yeah, I know what this is now, and I've developed some affinity for it, or I feel like I would choose it for lunch. Sometimes it's faster, but sampling is a great way to do it, and that's something we do a lot in our programs.
I had a guy in my show who is an organic gardener and provides some foods to local schools, but his kids came home one day, and he says this is one of his great moments in life was the kids wanting to trade their snack for his kids' organic carrots that apparently are really, really tasty. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that probably over time the kids sampled, his kids' food and then saw somebody else actually eating it and liking it, and that helped move them along. Well, I tell you what, we've got callers online, and I have a lot more questions for our guest today, Chef Josh Perkins. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back to learn some more. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. School lunches aren't sometimes thought of as very healthy, but our guest today is trying to change all that. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Chef Josh Perkins. In the studio with me, he's the regional executive chef for a company called Chartwell's K-12 North Central Region, and it's actually Chartwell's is the actual name, isn't it?
Chartwell's K-12. I'm in the North Central Region.
In the North Central Region, and we have a link on our Facebook page to Chartwell's, so if you want to take a closer look at Chartwell's K-12, you certainly can do that on our Facebook page. He's committed to bringing local organic food to schools, helping kids eat better. Chartwell's K-12 in the North Central Region right now, they're working with about 200,000 students across the region. And providing garden-to-school meals as part of their program. How about your kids? Do they eat well at school? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the on our Facebook page. Let's go to Keith and Leona next. Keith, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon. Just wanted to give you an example of how a small school district can do this and be successful and can be a real asset to a community. I'm in northern Wisconsin now, but I live in Port Townsend, Washington. I'm a member of the school board out there. And in our little school district, we enroll about 1,100 students in a grade school, a middle school, and a high school. We either grow or source locally virtually all of the food that our students eat, both for breakfast and for their lunches if they take part in our lunch program. And most students do. We have a small farm. The kids work on it from kindergarten up into high school. Our chef works with the chef at the local hospital. They create joint menus that are served in the hospital cafeteria and in the schools, and they actually give classes for people in the community on how to procure locally sourced food, how to find organic food, how to cook it, and how to create nutritious meals for their families as well as for their school kids.
Wow, that sounds like an ideal, doesn't it, Chef Josh?
It's inspirational. Your students are lucky, and I hope I get the chance to see your school at some point.
Yeah, that's
one. Come on out and pay us a visit.
Thank you.
We're very proud of what we do, and the kids like it too.
And it's Leo, and tell us the school district again.
It's Port Townsend, Washington,
sure.
Out on the Olympic Peninsula.
Yep, I know where it is.
All right, thank you so much for calling. Well, there's an example of what can be done. That involves a lot of work and a lot of commitment, I guess, on the part of that whole district and their families.
A tremendous amount. Yeah, that's a shining example of integrating all those systems and parts of the community into the school meal program.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Keith. Appreciate it very much. Anita in Wisconsin Dells has something for us. Hi, Anita.
Hello. I'm pretty proud of the Wisconsin Dells School District, especially Greg Heller, who works the food program. And when I was teaching school, I always sat with the kids at lunchtime, and I think that the food we eat and our food is as important a subject as math or English. And these kids would sit at the table, and we had three different tables, and we initiated whole grain bread. They'd never had it. They'd always had this white stuff. And so I said, okay, we're just going to take a quarter of a piece of bread, and we're going to see which table can eat all of this bread. Well, at first, ugh, I don't like that. But you know what? After two or three days, a few of the kids ate. The next day, a few more ate. And by the end of the week, every table almost ate all of this whole grain bread. Well, the table that did all of them, they got a little treat. And I know it's thriving, but it worked. By the end of the second week, all the kids loved whole grain bread.
So, you know, Anita, you touched on something really important there, which was you mentioned, you know, teaching other disciplines, other parts of the curriculum as part of this. Or you said, you know, it's as important to teach this. And fully agree, and that's actually something we're realizing now. We've got a couple of school districts outside of Indianapolis and Beech Grove and Warren who are working with installing or expanding learning gardens. This is a great project that was started by the kitchen community, and part of the project is showing that actually incorporating those other disciplines, rather than being an either or trying to having time compete or competing for time in the curriculum, is that they incorporate teaching language arts, math, science, and nutrition into garden activities. And they found that is incredibly powerful in getting students to kind of to be more than tourists in the garden, to say this is a really important part of what I'm learning in school in general. So I think you're absolutely right. And that's a great story.
Yeah, it is a great story. Kind of to go along with that, Jackie and Arena is wondering, I think it might have been an email, is wondering if nutritional information is provided to parents so they can influence their kids' eating habits at home.
Yeah, Jackie, it is. So the short answer is yes, and the slightly longer answer is that we use a recipe database which publishes all of the nutritional information to an app called NutriSlice. That's something that, that parents, school staff, students, anyone can and view on their phone. And so you can go in and you can look at the day's menu and find out all of the nutritional information about each individual menu item.
Yeah, very cool.
Conveniently, yeah.
Nadine in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Nadine.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show. I've never been on, so I appreciate the opportunity. I have a child who's been in the Appleton school districts for his entire career. He's in he's a sophomore right now. We've experienced public and private school situations. Yes, he does have some irritable bowel problems, which directly were traced back to certain additives and et cetera in the food. But my main thing is, having gone through this, we've dealt with Taher and Aramark so far. The absolute zero concern for GMO or poor food sources, either of those programs, and then high additives. When you really pressure them to give you the list of their ingredients and spices, high additives known to create the symptoms of ADD or ADHD in children at very high levels, cause stomach distress, like the caramel food coloring, and just no response back from school boards or interested people in the community, kids who leave so much food on their plate because it doesn't make them feel good to eat it. And I wish that there was a much bigger conversation about GMO with a higher herbicide pesticide aspect, better food sourcing, and get rid of the additives in the food and give the kids real food to eat. So I'll take my comments off the air, but when I feed kids here after school, it's amazing that they love the healthy, nutritious food. They love apple cider vinegar. They maybe never even tasted it before, et cetera. So thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling. Josh, comment from you, Josh Perkins.
I completely agree with the need for both transparency, and that's been one of our aims with publishing all of that information through NutriSlice, is to make it possible for people to see exactly what they're eating. We also have a really big push towards cleaner foods, and I think that's sort of what you're alluding to, is just being able to read the ingredients and say there are fewer ingredients, there are ingredients I recognize easily. You mentioned apple cider vinegar, and it made me think of a couple of composed salads that we use. And when I say composed salad, I mean when we put it on a salad bar, we might have whole fruits and vegetables. We might have some simple salads that are, you know, a bean salad with peppers and a simple dressing. And those tend to be very simple, clean recipes. We actually have some really strong accounts right in your neck of the woods, in Menasha and Kimberly, come to mind as a couple of accounts near to you, where we're really proud of having done not only what I'm talking about with publishing the food information, but incorporating student favorites. Great example is, you know, you can have a whole grain pizza that's freshly made, and that's our process, is to make it on site fresh, and you can incorporate vegetables onto that pizza, local vegetables, as well as serving it alongside a salad bar that has those composed salads, that has those locally sourced fresh items, and get that balance. You don't typically see a radical turnaround from one school meal program. You have to feed kids something they respond to well, so they're going to eat lunch.
Yeah.
And part of it is just balancing out fresh choices that are simple and everybody can understand what's in the food.
How does Chartwell K-12, how do you operate? Do schools approach you? You approach schools? What goes on?
Kind of both. We have a sales team, and then we have schools also just contact us and say, I know something about a program because a colleague of mine, you know, works with you and I want to know more. I'd like to get more of that program into my school.
Could you give an example of a school, let's say here in Wisconsin, that's part of your program and maybe have been a success story in your mind?
The one I just mentioned, Menasha, is a good example. That's a program where there's a very close relationship between the director of the school, Sue Malesa, and the director of the school account, and just in general the food service program and the school itself. They revitalized their high school, and we were a big part of the process of talking about how the food service program needed to be front and center, offering the best options to their students, and how the rebuild of the high school, which was a huge community endeavor, was also going to incorporate that. And if you look at their program, that's a great example of a situation where you do have student favorites, but they're always pushing the envelope. So you're going to see pizzas available to students every day, along with you know, made-to-order sandwiches from the deli, a great salad bar, and then they do a great job of incorporating chef's tables into their cafeteria, so you might see live-action cooking made-to-order with fresh ingredients. That's another. I mentioned sampling, which all by itself is a great way to get students more interested. Yeah. That's kind of the next level, because you're actually seeing, and when we feature this on stations, which we do in a number of accounts, or on a chef's table, and the student is coming up and seeing, this is food that's being made before my eyes, right? And sometimes I'm making some choices about how the food is going to be put together. The interest is tenfold. They automatically are drawn into the action, and they're a part of it. And that helps generate a ton of excitement for new, fresh dishes as well.
Oh, very interesting. Let's go to Mark in Plover next. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
I am in control of what I buy in my own house. We don't choose to buy a lot of Oreo cookies or such. We have them occasionally for fun. But I'm not in control when they go to school. And it's such a relief to know that there are people who really are taking it serious and trying to do it right. I mean, my wife and I laugh. At the school here in Stevens Point, they have pancakes and syrup with green beans and fresh vegetables. I'm like, okay, but it's healthy, which is good. What you have to teach your kids from baby on is to listen to things that are on PBS, like Daniel Tiger. What does he teach? You got to try new things because they might taste good. Daniel Tiger will teach your babies, and they will grow up to be healthy eaters.
Yeah.
I think that's, you make a really important point, which is, you know, kids getting the same message, even if the foods aren't exactly the same, but they're hearing it consistently. And so, you know, my compliments to you for making that commitment in your own home. School gardens, again, you know, that can be a great example of a way that an entire family can get involved in something that's that affects or is incorporated into the school food program. We really try to do that wherever we can, not just because I think it's important for us to make sure parents are aware of what we're doing for the school, you know, the school meal program and for their students, but also because it's demonstrably true. There have been studies that show this, that when kids are seeing either parents or school staff eating the same food that they're eating, trying the same foods that they're trying, it has a pronounced impact on their acceptance of those foods. So, and this is something I often preach in trainings, you know, around the region, is to say, I want everybody in the account to taste the food. I want, you know, can we set up an open house for parents? Can we invite find some way to extend the invitation to staff to get in the cafeteria? Because then kids really know, this isn't good. This isn't kid food, and you should eat this because it's good for you. It's like everybody's eating this. I sat down and ate this with my mom or my dad or my teacher, and it has a really important impact for the same reasons that you're talking about, Mark. Because then they get a consistent message that the food is enjoyable.
You have another before we take any more calls. By the way, join in 800-642-1234, the number to call with your own experiences or maybe your questions about the program. You have another program called Imperfectly Delicious Food. How did that get going?
Imperfectly Delicious Produce is a really exciting program. It got going. The program was launched in 2015, and it's, on the face of it, it's incredibly common sense thing to do. It's just that it hadn't been done at a scale like this before. I think it had been done in bits and pieces. But the program, which was launched by Compass, in 2015, what it recognized was the amount of food, healthy, nutritious produce that was being grown, particularly in large operations, really large agricultural operations, that was going to waste because it did not meet retail presentation standards. So this is what's so common sense about it. Becomes invisible to us. If you go into a grocery store and you look at the produce displays, it's magically all the zucchini are the same size and peppers are the same size color. And anybody who's ever gardened knows that's not how produce grows, right?
No.
So what happened to all the rest? And this program is kind of the answer of what happens to all the rest. Was it was literally being by the ton being plowed back into the field or plowed into waste heaps because there was not a planned home for that produce, and it did not meet retail call standard. So the program, there's no reason why a food service operation needs uniformly graded, colored, shaped produce. That's the business of chefs and cooks, is to fabricate those products and make them into delicious food, right? That's what we do for a living. So why wouldn't we create a route of travel for all of that food into a system where it can be used and not wasted? And that's what we've done. And I've worked really hard over the past year to get a couple of products to be uniform offerings that are standard in our programs. Baby carrots and celery sticks feature on every salad bar, to take those all from IDP and put them in all the K-12 programs. But there's a much larger gamut of products. And you'll see, even regionally or within states, certain produce houses have these beautiful catalogs of IDP is just kind of like the shorthand for it. IDP stands for any product that is the sort of the byproduct of a mainstream commercial process for produce, right? So it could be the harvesting process, could be sorting, could be cutting. And we, our goal is to take as much of that produce as possible and put it back into the flow of food, because it is safe and nutritious.
It's safe and nutritious and probably less expensive.
Right.
in the long run. So why not use it? That's great. We have some more callers online. I don't know if we can go to Lori or not here yet. Let's try that. No, I guess we're still waiting on Lori. What kinds of changes have you seen in the kids' eating habits? Now, you've worked with some of these schools for a while now. What kind of results are you getting?
I think the best way to quantify it is to talk about the program that I was mentioning with Beech Grove and Warren, because they've done the organization, the kitchen community that does the learning gardens, the installation, mm-hmm. and kind of monitoring of that. They did an impact study that I think points towards some of the most specific data. And it has to do, there are a couple of things that stood out to me when I read it. One was 23%, students are 23% more likely to eat fruits and vegetables as a regular part of their meal if they participate in a school garden program. 98% of the teachers who were surveyed in that study said that students were likely to be more interested in food and nutrition if they were involved in that program. 89% of the teachers said they felt that some of the standard curricular disciplines were very appropriate or beneficial to teach within the context of a school garden. So those are some stats. You know, it can be hard to put a finger on it precisely, but you really see the impact in easily. It's a very visible way. Like, for example, mm-hmm. coming up in October, Farm to School Month, as I mentioned, they're having a recipe contest. This is the second, to my knowledge, the second one. There may have been more done. Last spring, I worked with them. We did a recipe contest to celebrate heirloom crops in Indiana, because it was a bicentennial. And this time around, they want to celebrate Brussels sprouts. So mm-hmm. the students are having a recipe contest, and this will end up being part of something they try. It's very kind of, you're sneaking it in. They need to judge their recipes, right? So to judge the recipes, to find the best one, they're going to end up eating some Brussels sprouts. And the same thing, when we did the recipe contest for the previous time, to be part of that whole thing, the excitement of that contest, you have to try these foods. You have to be involved with this. And you do some fun stuff, like we did an heirloom corn seed giveaway. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff where you can really see the impact right in front of your face, because you're talking to somebody about a plant, you know, that everybody knows. It's a crop everybody knows, and so much so that it's almost boring.
Yeah.
Like, I'm from Indiana, and you're talking to me about corn. Well, what about corn? I don't, you know, it's invisible to me. I see it every day, right? But I'm saying, yeah, but this is a corn that kind of doesn't grow around here anymore, and unless you decide to plant it, you could take that home and plant that in your garden, and it grows 12 feet tall. And when you tell an elementary student that a corn stalk is going to grow 12 feet tall in their garden,
they like that.
They're interested, right? They want to go home and try that out and find out more about produce and more about their region. So, yeah.
You mentioned Brussels sprouts. That's my go-to for my daughter. Boy, if there are Brussels sprouts in the area, she will eat them.
They're a favorite with me, too, always have been. And they're actually much more versatile than I think a lot of people recognize. Once you get into it, they can really fit into a lot of dishes.
Oh, they're wonderful. I love them, too. Lori in Madison, your turn. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I'm just curious. My daughter is 20 years old right now, and starting at age 5, she became a vegetarian. And to this day, she's a vegetarian, and she was always very passionate about avoiding meat. And I'm just curious if this is like a trend.
Yeah, is that a trend?
That's a hard question for me to answer. I think it's I think it's been a trend for a while. I think that there's definitely I'll say this. I think that there's a trend towards people wanting to know more and more about what's in their food and understand it better. And meat is a product that is not always processed, but is likely, you know, you don't, when you go to a freezer aisle in a grocery store is a good example. You look at a bag of corn kernels, it's corn kernels,
yeah,
right? And you look at the meat products that are in the freezer, they tend to be highly processed. So I think there's a trend towards people wanting to have simpler foods and cleaner foods. And it's easy, I think in some ways it's easier to do if you're getting more towards produce and away from meat. Yep.
Thank you for that question. And Chef Josh Perkins, thank you so much for being with us today. And we have more information on our Facebook page about Chartwell's K-12 and about Chef Josh Perkins. They're doing some really cool things with school districts all across Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois, and Indiana. We'll talk with him some more. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store.